you can get.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Fellow radio goats, guess what? Jeff is not doing the intro tonight. He just dumped it to me and said, oh, I was busy. So you get to listen to me for about 45 seconds while he gets the video stuff up, and I hope nothing else. How many of y'all out there in radio land watched or went to all of the goings-on at Daytona this past weekend? Don't everybody answer
right, raise your hands.
Yep.
Let us count.
Jeff, does that mean you're back?
No, I'm not back.
Keep talking. He's still playing.
Keep talking here.
Well,
turn it over to Cody or Boppy if you want to.
Oh, I'm good. I'll figure out something to talk about. I don't know what, but I'll figure out something to talk about. As you probably have guessed, we are shorthanded tonight because of the goings on at Daytona. We're missing Tim. And we're missing Coastal Jack. So y'all are in for a rare treat.
Is Hugh here? Oh, yeah, that's Hugh. All right, I'm back.
All right, Jeff is back.
Way to go, Hugh.
Yep.
Thanks for opening the show tonight, Hugh.
Yep.
A star is born, ladies and gentlemen. You saw it on the stage in Orlando with Donald Trump and the dude coming up on stage. Same thing happened right here, man. Hewlin Oval crash. Star is born. He's now the host. Cody Densmore has joined us. All the way from Dawsonville, Georgia. Cody, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good, man. That's great. How are things in Dawsonville?
I guess we're pretty good.
So are you all fired up now that racing has started, officially started for the season? Daytona's coming up. Speed Weeks is going on. It's in the air, right?
Oh, yeah. I think everybody in North Georgia knows about it. Chase won the pole, and of course, the old siren went off. And I saw on Facebook yesterday or something the video of the pool room that they shared. It already got to 66,000 views because
there you're talking.
Several of the Atlanta news had picked it up and all the people sharing it. So everybody knows about the siren. Hopefully,
that's cool. Man, how long has it been since the siren went off?
I guess. Last time Chase won a pole, so whenever that was last year.
Cool. Siren don't sound like it used to, right?
Oh, it's pretty loud. It's louder than the one they had for Bill.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully Chase can fill the spot and they can wear this siren out too.
He'll probably have to get a new one before long anyway.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Glad to have you, Cody. Thanks for being on with us, man.
Good to see you, too.
Good to see you, too. The Bopper, all the way from Shallotte, North Carolina, home of Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the Endless Warranty, is with us. How you doing tonight, Bopper?
Doing good, Jefferson.
Good, man.
On this pre-Daytona week.
Pre-Daytona, man. How are things in Shallotte?
Busy.
Busy? That's busy, good. Yeah. Bobby's Auto Parts, busy, right?
That's right.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
That's great to hear, man.
Traffic terrible.
Sir. Traffic's terrible. People won't let you out in the street.
I love it, man. Come spend your money. I used to, when I first moved here, I complained every day about the daggone tourists. But after going through 2008, 9, 10, 11, and 12 without them.
You just love them.
I love them. Come on back, baby. Cut in front of me. I don't care. You know, turn right when you're signaling left. I don't care. You know, just give me.
Just spend money.
Yeah, spend your money. Love it. Bring your van down, ride 15 miles an hour in the left lane. We don't care. Come on down. You can do that here.
Hey, you needn't care because that's what they're going to do.
That's what they're going to do. I love them, man. I love them. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the person who opened the show, the splitter, the man on the street, Hewlin Oval Crash. We call him Hugh.
And hey,
he has Hugh's views on the news here on this show tonight. So let's get around. Let me put everybody on the spot. Hugh, what are you going to be talking about tonight?
I am going to be talking about...
Oh, you really put him on the spot.
Justin Fontaine.
He's reading this, guys. Who?
Justin Fontaine.
Fontaine, coming from Hugh's views on the news
Fontaine
tonight.
Fontaine brothers.
So, Bopper, have you figured out what you're going to talk about yet?
Probably not.
Various Daytona stuff.
Daytona stuff. Man, that's topical. That's one thing, man. You can always tell a pro. You can't tell him much, but you can tell a pro.
Well, this is Daytona stuff.
That's good. I like it.
Surprise.
And Cody, you were on the show early tonight, man. You made it a point to be here before showtime. You've got something on your mind, man. What is it? Does it start with a C?
No, not really. No.
C-H-A-S-E-L-E?
No, nothing to do with the old boy, really.
Really? Oh, cool. All right. Got something special. All right.
We can talk about that. Thank goodness. This weekend I went down to Florida and I had participated in a 24-hour go-kart race.
Oh my God, I think I saw that somewhere.
So I figured I'd talk about that.
That is freaking awesome, man. I can't wait to hear about that. Cool. That is very, very cool. Ladies and gentlemen, if you just tuned in, you'll see if you're looking at us through your on your PC that Coastal Jack Walker is not with us tonight. And if you're listening to us, you will notice the vacant spot that Tim Leeming normally occupies because he is also in Florida tonight. Those two gentlemen taking part in all the festivities down south, and I wish I could be there with them, but we're all here. We're going to carry on the show, so let's get right into it with our opening segment this evening. Tough things happening at Volusia with cars getting into the crowd. Anybody want to take that and go with it? Bobby, you seem to be right back there and ready to go.
The first car that went into the crowd was a couple of nights earlier than the Sunday night crash, which the first guy in was Joey Saldana, and he had a much more spectacular, flamboyant type of crash, and didn't hit any spectators at all.
Right.
I mean, lucky, but still didn't hit anything. Sunday night, which was the last night of the sprint cars at Volusia, Dale Blaney and Rico Abreu and maybe another car all wound up at the same place at the same time on the track. Anyway, Dale Blaney wound up. He didn't go through the catch fence, as was often reported. It was like a high jumper doing the Foosberry flop.
But
he
wasn't
cleared
it. Well, it was in the pit, on the pit side of the track, wasn't it?
Well, at Volusia, the pits are off of the second turn.
Okay,
so it's past
the grandstand and off of the second turn.
Yes, at the beginning of the back stretch is where the pit road entrance is, and that area is typically where race crews and those kinds of things view the race from.
Got it.
But Dale Blaney and Joey Saldana, they just – sprint cars can get – they can get so – high,
oh,
so much
can.
Altitude.
Yeah.
They just cleared, both of them cleared. And the fence there is, I mean, it's pretty good size. I mean, they've been running sprints at Volusia for years. It's not like it's their, they're amateurs at sprint car racing, but it just cleared the fence.
Scary stuff.
Unfortunately, it did injure three spectators. One of them, one was released, and one is listed in critical condition. So, thoughts with those families. But of course, that the downside is it brings the kind of publicity to racing that you don't want.
Yep.
When something like that happens, they were out there with the satellite trucks.
Yeah, the people that don't normally give a crap about racing show up to report on that stuff.
Right. That's right. But Volusia never missed a beat. Sunday night when the Dale Blaney wreck happened was the last night of the sprint cars. Last night, Monday night, the late models rolled in and the action resumed. It was seamless. Chris Madden won last night's late model race, so at least there wasn't, you know, the track wasn't shut down or impounded or quarantined or, you know, anything of that nature. So
Bobby, have you ever had the opportunity to go to Speed Weeks and take part in all the racing that goes on all week long?
No, but for the last couple of years that we have gone to the historic beach parade, we have gone out to Volusia on the Friday night. We would get in the town on Friday afternoon and go to Volusia, which was always the sprint cars were there the times I have been. And
the cold weather.
Yep, this year would have been a great year yep. to have been there with the weather like it was. But those cars are absolutely incredible. You know, you can go to NASCAR Super Speedways, and the sensation of speed is not like seeing a sprint car on a half-mile dirt track go at 140 miles
an hour. So what are they turning that 10, 11 seconds?
1270.
1270?
That's the pole, tonight, the fastest we ever
went. That's a fairly flat track. It's not a high bank track.
It's not a high bank. But they are wide open all the way around. There ain't no lifting, no blipping. And they're not sideways. They just go that big wing and everything
keeps them planted.
So much downforce, they just go around there wide. It's just like Talladega.
That's amazing.
Wide open.
I want to do that, man. That's a bucket list thing. And every year I think, well, maybe I can work that in this year, but hopefully before I get so old I can't get around.
But they get on. Remember how many they start? 24 or something like that?
Yeah.
And they get to go. You cannot literally keep up with them. You can try to follow one car, and if you take your eyes off of him.
We were there late, therefore we were down low in the first row or two. And you simply, your eyes and neck muscles wouldn't move your head fast enough to keep up with them on the front stretch right in front of you. About all you could hope to do would be catch them in turn one and follow them through four and just forget about watching them down the front stretch because you couldn't follow them. They were faster than it was physically possible for you to watch them being down that low in the grandstand.
That's amazing.
The talent and the ability that it takes to do that is the reflexes and the eyesight, the hand, the coordination, and all that kind of stuff has got to be at a razor sharp level.
Sure, absolutely.
One mistake. I mean, they're averaging 140.
Man,
on a half mile dirt track, that is incredible.
That is incredible, man. And
the key to that is a dirt track, which limits your traction. I don't know, though. They treat those things with God knows what kind of chemicals. They after the first few laps, it looks like pavement.
Yeah, they are as massive traction there, actually, when you look at the tires on those things and the setups and stuff. It's amazing how much power they can get to the ground.
You look at them from the back, there's like they could have 15 inches of stagger.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the right rear wheel is huge.
Yeah.
And compared to the left rear.
What's amazing to me is that on even a dirt track at the end of the race, those cars have got slicks on them. They have literally pulled the rubber off of the tires on a dirt track. And that's you got to have a lot of power to do that.
You got to have a lot of power. You got to have a lot of power to do that.
Well, I mean, they're what 800 horsepower and 1,200 pounds, something like that.
The power to weight is ungodly.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that is a that's sort of a traveling circus, kind of under most radars. But that place, when you go to those, is absolutely packed. I mean, motorhomes after motorhome after motorhome after camper camp, all the way in the whole parking area. And those aren't the drivers; those are fans.
Yeah.
That have been there, I don't know how long they've been there, but they come for
they,
the whole
they
week.
Come, yeah, they come and stay. They don't go to the big track. They come and watch the dirt races, and when that's over with, they go home.
In the original, and that's just the sprint car part of the dirt speed week, so then that's one part of it. But all of this got started in the beginning because of the, you know, the attraction of Daytona and the 500 and so on. But now, I don't know that it wouldn't go on exactly as it is, whether the 500 was going on or not, because it's not the same fans. It is a, it, an entity all of its own, and just operates simultaneously. So there was the action going on at Volusia. There was also the late model, the Lucas Oil late models were at East Bay at Tampa last week, and last Sunday night they were at Bubba Raceway at Ocala, Florida, as well as there was various late model shows in Joy at Brunswick, Georgia, and Screven, Georgia. So there's a lot that, and this year was a very successful, a lot of competition, a lot of fan support. It has been very successful. This week will conclude the Florida Georgia Dirt action, but that's something that unless you know about it and keep up, you won't know about it. It's not covered by the mainstream, and it's certainly not covered by NASCAR.
Yeah,
but it is a big entity.
I'm going to do that next year. I'm going to make the statement right now. I don't know how, but I've been wanting to do that ever since I was a teenager, and I've never done it. And here I am, an old fart, and still haven't done it.
Well, you are.
You're older than me, Hugh.
Yes.
In 2013, I think it's the first year when we went to the parade. That year, Jeff, you and Jack went with us. I think that was the year that they had the great NASCAR race around the storm drains.
It was.
They had a late model race that incorporated the back stretch at Daytona and the runoff area.
They ran modifieds there too, didn't they? I think they did.
Put up some trash barrels or something and run around that, and they were going to use the stands off the back stretch for the people, for the spectators to look at. And it seemed to be a way to somehow garner the New Smyrna attraction.
Yeah.
They could just go there. And that lasted 1 year.
One try at that, and it was over with.
Anybody who saw it said, this ain't going to happen.
And anybody with any sense could have known that before they tried it. So this year, rather than try to fight New Smyrna, I think they had a K&N race. I saw a post on where who is the big NASCAR man, Steve O'Donnell. He had posted some pictures on Twitter about had a nice crowd at New Smyrna for the K&N race, and that's what reminded me a couple of years ago they were trying to go head to head with them.
Yeah,
they've tried various kinds of cars on the big tracks. I can remember, I guess it was back in the 70s when they ran Bowman Gray type modifieds at Charlotte. And that almost made a disaster.
You remember when they used to run those little dash cars at Daytona?
And it looked like they, you could walk faster than they went.
I know, man. On that size track.
On that size track with those tiny little cars, they didn't.
But
there was a lot of speed, but they didn't look very good.
They had some hellacious wrecks with them.
One
of them almost went in the lake one time.
Yep.
Just some hellacious wrecks.
Speaking of hellacious wrecks, Cody.
Yes.
You managed to avoid those this weekend, didn't you?
Tell
us what you did, man. I've been dying to hear about this.
All right. So I participated in a 24-hour go-kart race. It's called the 24 Hours of America.
Oh, dude, that sounds exciting.
How long
were you in the seat?
Combined probably a little over 6 hours, I think.
In a car.
I mean, not all at one time, obviously. No. But
That'd make for a sore butt, wouldn't it?
I mean, I'm already sore. The longest I done it one time was an hour and a half. But it was down in Bushnell, Florida, which is, I believe, it's just below Ocala and above Orlando, west of Daytona. So I mean, around that.
That's close to Volusia County, where you're describing.
So were you on a round track or a road course type track?
It was road course. Uh-huh. I believe it's about a mile long, obviously pretty flat. There was a bridge that you go over and then make a circle back around and go under.
And obviously it was lit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, of course, we ran into the Florida weather and, got the good old rain showers, which I'm good at driving it rain. Well, I enjoy driving it rain. How about that? I don't want to toot my own horn. So
yeah. Well, usually, if you enjoy it, you're good at it.
Yeah. So that was, that was a lot of fun. But we started out terrible. There was 23 or 24 teams, and we qualified second to last, our team. We had a pretty bad cart start out with. And so it took us about a little over an hour to finally get a good cart, because you have to make 12 cart swaps where you switch carts. So that way, you know, there's not an advantage of one team getting a good cart and having it the entire time. There was also a lot of professionals in this race. There was 9 professional teams. One of them, you had the one of the drivers that won the 24 Hours of Daytona this year. His name is Jordan Taylor, the team that Jeff Gordon was on this year. And so he obviously, you know, went out, just was lapping the field pretty much. Not really, but, you know, he was pretty good ahead. So our first driver was doing about 5 seconds off of our practice. So we switched to me, and it was just terrible. I didn't pass one person, and it's kind of embarrassing. So we switched carts and switched drivers even worse, and switched drivers again even worse. Well, we finally, about an hour and a half, 2-3 hours later, we finally got a good cart, but we were so far behind. So for the first 6 hours of the race, we were just dead last. I mean, there was no digging out of the hole. So I got in, it finally started to rain, which worked to my advantage because I'm used to driving on slicks in the rain. And so everybody was slowing down and trying to, you know, brake real early going into the turns. And I mean, I was just basically like a sprint car, just sideways the entire time through the turns, past them, doing the slide jobs here and there. So that really helped my advantage.
How many cars did you pass?
I don't know. I mean, I made up... made up 4 laps in my hour and a half stint, so that's not,
son,
not
that's too getting bad. Right. That's pretty good, man.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
So then we had 3 red flags because of rain. I got in again about 5:30 in the morning until about 7. I made up 2 more laps. It wasn't raining anymore, but the track was still slick, obviously. And then my last stint was about 10 o'clock to about 11:30 on Sunday morning. That's when the race ended. And, the last 2 stints of mine, so the one at 6 in the morning and the one at, you know, 10 or 11 in the morning, I kept getting calls over the radio that I was setting the fastest lap on the track at any point in time. So I was, yeah, during the morning stint, during the early morning when it was still slick, I had some of the best times on track by over a second and a half.
Wow.
And then the last stint I was in, I was still getting some of the best times. I didn't set the overall track best lap, but I was still getting the best times at that point in time, and I was actually pushing the leader. I was just working so hard to try and make up our lost ground. We ended up finishing second in class out of eight teams in that class. They were semi-pro. Nice. We finished 12th overall, which, you know, doesn't sound that good, but I think it's pretty dang good considering we were...
You made up a lot of ground.
Started dead last for 6 hours, yeah. So... I had a lot of fun.
So for a fourth of the race, you were last.
Yeah,
and you ended up half pack. That's pretty doggone good, man.
Cody, are these shifter carts or what?
No, these were 12 horse go karts.
4-cycle.
4 cycles, right? They're Honda engines. I mean, they still wear you out though.
Are they like a sprint or are they like enduros?
I don't know how to describe it to you. They're not the lay-down carts, if that helps you out any. They're just...
You're set up on them.
Right. I mean, they'll still get to about 55, I'm sure. Now, I've driven some of the shifters before, and they are just scary. You know, the shifter carts will pull 3 G's of force into a turn. And, I mean, when you get done with that, even a couple laps, you get out of that cart just shaking with all the adrenaline. It's just... It's scary how fast they'll go. Before I drove one, they always said it's the closest thing to an Indy car, an F1 car. And I said, there's no way. They're just, you know, they're just blowing smoke. But until I drove one, I thought, my gosh, that's the closest thing to an F1 car, you know. And probably a sprint car because it's open wheel and, you know, there's no safety mechanisms to it. It's just you and the machine.
And your butt's an inch off the ground.
Are those the lay-down carts?
They do make shifter lay-down carts, but the ones we race at our track aren't. They're set up. I mean, they'll still do, you know, 120.
Golly.
They're scary. If you're not wearing a rib protector, like a little vest that's usually made of fiberglass or carbon fiber, you'll crack ribs just by making a turn. So, but you know, the weekend went a lot better than expected. On the way down there, I was in my truck, and I had some transmission problems, and I had to leave my truck in Valdosta at a shop and had to rent a car to finish my trip, so that wasn't fun. Just a cheap little sensor in the transmission. It's a shame.
Could have been a whole lot worse.
Could have been a whole lot worse. And so,
good thing
you
didn't break down in Shalott.
You would have bought a transmission.
God, you'd have been $2,000 and it still wouldn't.
That wouldn't have fixed the sensor.
I won't be visiting Shalott then. But, God. Yeah, I was. It was kind of discouraging when you're, you know, 6 hours into the race and you're dead last. You think there's no way you can make up ground, because usually in those endurance races, you've got to win or get ahead in the first two or three hours, because otherwise you're done. And so I'm just proud of the fact that we were able to gain all that time, gain ahead the middle of the night and early in the morning to get where we did.
That's cool as can be, too. You got anything else like that coming up in the future that you know of? I mean, tell us how that came about and if you're going to be able to do it again.
Yeah, I have plans to do it again. This 24 Hours of America, they do it at a different track each year. So this year was at that Bushnell track. Year before that was in New Orleans. There's a track down there. Year before that was Daytona. And they've done Jacksonville, Charlotte, the NASCAR track. Not the oval, but the road course. So they just pick a different track each year. And long story short, some members of the track I work at put together a team and asked if I would be a part of it. And I said, well, why not? You know? So at my track, we do some events like that. We do like a 4, a 6, an 8, and a 10 hour with our rental carts. So that way it's an equal playing field. And, we're working on getting zoning to put lights in at our track.
Yeah.
So once we do that, we are going to host a 24 hour event.
That's cool.
And, yeah, you don't think that 24 or even 2 or 3 hours in a go-kart's a long time, but my gosh, when you're in it, you know, it's a whole different ballgame.
Let me tell you something, dude. When Dustin was a little boy, I don't know how old he was, man. I might have been 12, 13 or something. He and I went on a guy's vacation, and we went to Pigeon Forge. And our deal was to ride every go-kart track in Pigeon Forge. And then from that, pick the best ones and then go ride it for the last day. We rode the same one over and over and over again. And I've never been as sore doing anything in my life as I was coming out of there, you know, because we literally rode go-karts all day long for like 3 days. And it was a great vacation. But I can imagine doing that for like an hour and a half stint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wide open.
You know, I didn't sleep hardly any, so I mean, I was awake for about 42, 43 hours. And so obviously Sunday night and Monday, I slept for a better part of my day. Yeah. But you're talking about sore. When I got out of my last stint, that was one of the hardest times I'd ever driven in my life. I mean, I was driving as hard as I could, pushing the leader, bump drafting him down the stretch. I could have passed him. I thought, what's the point of passing him when we can work together? Just like a plate race, you know, when you can work together and get ahead. And when I got out of that cart, I could barely stand up. I mean, I was so sore between calluses on my hands, and my fingers were hurting from gripping so hard, my back, and, you know. But all that aside, it was totally worth it.
That's cool, buddy.
To say that I've done that and, you know, hopefully open up more doors anyway.
Absolutely, man. Proud of you, buddy. Cool stuff. Thanks. All right, it's time now for Hugh's Views on the News. Take it away, Hugh.
I got it.
You got it.
Now we're going to the big track at Daytona, but we're going for the ARCA race. ARCA driver Justin Fontaine, car number 33, Promatic Toyota, suffered a compression fracture of the lower spine as a result of what was to become the last lap crash of the ARCA 200. When was that, Friday night?
I think it was actually Saturday afternoon.
Well, whenever. I've lost track of all of the goings on and the postponements. Anyway, I was very impressed watching the safety crew return the number 33 car to its upright position so the driver could be safely removed. For those of you that didn't see the race on the last, they called a thing because of the time, and it was running into the next race, and they had to do some work on the safer barrier. But on what proved to be the last lap, there was a three-car crash, and this number 33 car with Justin Fontaine at the wheel ended up upside down. And it wasn't a hard rollover. It just went over real easy. But prior to that, he hit the wall pretty hard. And they determined, while the car was still upside down, that he was injured enough that they didn't feel comfortable cutting him loose from the seat belts. So they decided to roll the car back on its wheels before they got him out. And it turned out they not only did they do that, but they cut the top off the car to get him out. But the thing that impressed me the very most out of all of it was the safety crew response and actions in looking after him and the car. As soon as they determined that they needed to turn the car back upright to do anything, they backed a wrecker up to the car and fastened a cable and a strap to each side of it while it was upside down, extended the booms on the wrecker, and that wrecker driver, I was just in awe. I've been around wreckers, wrecks, mechanical things all my life. But this fella put on a show. He turned that car from upside down to right side up as you or I would pick up a toy car and just simply turn it right side up and set it down very softly. It didn't scrape. It didn't bump. He turned that car right side up with the cables on that wrecker without one jostle. I dare say that aside from the fact that he was rolling over, the driver didn't feel a thing. I have witnessed a lot of rollovers and a lot of turnbacks, and I've never seen one that easy and smooth, which is a real testament to not only that wrecker driver, but the entire safety crew at Daytona and the way they operate as a unit. Everybody had something to do, and nobody was stepping on anybody else's toes. They got it done quickly, quietly, and very, very professionally. To me, the safety crew at Daytona deserves a great big pat on the back for what they did. And it mostly went unnoticed because they went on to something else. It was the last lap of the race, and I'm sure that TV coverage doesn't like to cover having to cut somebody out of a car because you never quite know what the result could be. Although you could tell that he was at least somewhat alert because you could see him moving around in the car.
Yeah, you know, we've all seen that deal where they flip the car right side up and they just basically give it a shove,
yeah,
and it falls over.
Clunk.
Yeah. Which would be enough to create an injury all by itself.
Well, and they probably already had heard enough from him to know that his back hurt him,
yep,
or he had a back,
yep,
problem, so they did not want to do that because that's a if you've ever been in a car that's been on its top and been turned back over, that's a real violent bump when it comes all the way over.
Yep.
And I was just in awe of this fella watching him work the thing. Because he turned that car over with nothing more than the straps and the cables, never had to rehook. Because he began to pull one cable up tight and release the other one in unison until the car came right back on its wheels.
And there it is, folks, ladies and gentlemen. Where else in media can you see somebody giving kudos to the wrecker driver? Hughes Views on the News does it right here, recognizing things that you might have missed.
Recognizing.
That's the kind of things that I watch.
Yeah. What was that word we used last week?
That was last week.
It was extrapolated.
He extrapolated out of that whole thing the goodness of the wrecker driver. And, Hugh, we appreciate that very much, man. That was great. So, Bobby, you've had some time to think about this. What have you extrapolated from this week's
for
news?
Those who haven't, this just happened today, ladies and gentlemen. If you click on J-Ski, for instance, you will get – what will come up is an ESPN site, not the familiar, and the J-Ski articles will be there, but it's
well, didn't ESPN buy J-Ski
a while back? I don't know. It's more.
Yeah, J-Ski's been owned by ESPN for a long time.
So they might have finally just branded it as ESPN.
But this, I was reading it earlier today, and it was still the traditional
you know, Jayski website, but now it is ESPN, an ESPN page. So,
well, that's interesting that they would do that, especially in view of the fact that Julian Assange from WikiLeaks is getting ready to take CNN down. You'd think they might just want to hunker down and not put any major branding on. Just kidding. I didn't mean to bring politics on that.
Yeah. But, you know,
but that's CNN, not ESPN.
I'm just saying, it's a major news network, man. You know.
Well,
ESPN is hosting this because they don't even have an on-air contract for NASCAR.
Yeah, they don't even have a NASCAR presence.
Yeah, it went to ESPN.com/Jayski.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Jayski.com. Jayski.com has been forwarded. That URL has been forwarded to ESPN.com/Jayski.
That happened this day, today, because earlier this morning it was not done, and tonight
it is. So apparently they've owned it for some time. I know they bought it. I thought they bought it some time ago. They've flat taken it over.
Yep.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. The readership will probably go down now.
Well, I'm just looking at it right now, and I always like to look at the paint schemes. And you're scrolling down the paint scheme list, and above you, you've got all kinds of scores that you don't care about. On the left side, you've got all kinds of NFL, NBA stats that I don't care about.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to keep track of what's NASCAR and what's not, you know.
Yeah.
But what I think that, you know, these various topics on this page would have been the bullets on Jayski's his normal page.
Yeah.
And then if you look on the white crawler there at the top, there's the old Jayski Home Cup Series, Xfinity, and so on. So that much is kind of familiar. There's even the part where you can find the various news links and so on. So I guess it's all there, the same content, but it just looks different.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising. I kept clicking it and clicking it earlier in the show, trying to, you know, to get the Jayski, and every way that I went, still wound up at ESPN. So,
can we still find the TV ratings?
I think so, yeah. TV media, TV listings, TV ratings. If you look just right down there underneath the ESPN logo there, if you'll notice, Jayski Home Cup Series, Xfinity Series. And
yeah, if you go
all
yeah, when
that.
You, when you flip over to that, it goes back to Jayski.com. If you click on TV ratings, it goes back to Jayski.com if you look at the URL up in the top.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. It goes back to the old Jayski.
But stats are on ESPN. That's going to be confusing. They're going to screw up a lot of people with this.
Yeah, yeah, probably so.
Yeah, because once you click that and go back, you've lost the Jayski menu. If I click stats and go back, now I'm on an ESPN site, and I have no way of seeing all the other Jayski news that was there before. That's a screw up. And if I refresh the page, I get it back.
Yeah, I just done that too. And
teams and drivers. It's still ESPN.com. Paint schemes. They got that on ESPN. There must be some of it they haven't moved over yet, because you're getting some ESPN.com stuff and some Jason stuff there.
That's going to be a goat rodeo.
That's a goat rodeo right there, folks. That's how we named the show.
We can see one.
That's a quaddle bomb. That's a quaddle bomb. You're right.
We can see a goat rodeo coming.
We know one when we see one, folks. We live it. We
know it. We wrote it.
So if you click Jayski News, we go back to the Jayski site. Let's see. How did I get there? If I go to Cup Series and go down to main news page.
So, see, Jeff, all these people that's having trouble navigating New Racers Reunion site, you're not the only one in town now.
This will take the heat off me and
take the heat right off of you.
All you people that are fussing about me, go navigate the Jayski site for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least, yeah. So, anyway. But
yeah, I've been, I guess, reading Jayski for about 15 years.
Yeah.
To wind up at ESPN a while ago was a...
That was a shock.
Yep. I'd say that's a mess right there, man. That's a quaddle bomb for
sure. That's a quaddle bomb. Yeah.
I'll give you something while we're talking about new media and whatnot. I was reading an article earlier, and I had it pulled up on my phone from Jeff Gluck.
I saw a little bit of that.
Yep.
It's the Wall Street Journal reports raises questions about NASCAR leadership. And the first sentence, it says, mainly, should Brian France still be in charge? And I won't read the whole thing, but it goes on
Please do. I'm intrigued.
It goes on to say that, you know, he reports to his sister and his uncle on decisions and everything like that. It says that his sister didn't know about his support for the president until she saw it on TV, that he didn't consult either one of those for the Confederate flag ban in last year. But anyway, the last paragraph says, so based on this reporting, we know NASCAR's CEO makes road decisions, does not show up to the majority of the races, which it said earlier in the article he showed up to roughly half. He is not very engaged in key planning for the future, all while presiding over the biggest decline in the sport's history. The Wall Street Journal said TV viewership is down 45%.
Wow.
After the Wall Street Journal report, it also appears confirmed that France does not own a stake in NASCAR.
Huh?
Which is pretty shocking.
I wonder how that happened.
I wonder if he did and sold it, or whether they
I was reading earlier, it says, using four sources, the Wall Street Journal reported France, NASCAR's chairman and CEO, sold his stake in NASCAR to other family members more than a decade ago. As a result, these people say Mr. France essentially works for his sister, Lisa, and Uncle Jim France, even though he's NASCAR's chief executive officer. That means he runs the sport on a day-to-day basis, but is supposed to seek approval from Miss Kennedy and their uncle for any major changes to the association.
Well, then they're both idiots for letting that buffoon run that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
That shines a new light on the whole thing.
If that's the case, they should have fired him two years ago.
We all thought all this time that they probably were the sensible ones in the family. But if they put that idiot in charge
and keep him there.
And he doesn't have any stock, we thought he was there because he ruled the roost.
He's just an employee.
That's ridiculous.
If he has no stock, he is an employee.
That's ridiculous, man. That's ridiculous.
Well, he is.
Yeah,
he is. Well,
Cody, that was very enlightening. I really appreciate you bringing that to us.
Very surprising. Shedding light.
You need to speak up more often.
Shedding light in an area that we would have never.
I had no idea. I mean, I don't read that crap. I don't go look up who owns what and do all that. I just assumed that buffoon was in charge because he owned a bunch of the stock.
Yeah.
Any intelligent person would draw the same conclusion.
So
he couldn't be in charge because he was qualified.
Let me say that in view of these facts, there is no hope.
Oh, no.
Because there's no brains behind the organization. The people that I thought had the brains put him in charge.
And keep him there.
Holy cow.
Okay, so that brings up something that, not trying to beat a dead horse, but
let's beat the horse.
I tuned in to watch the Advanced Auto Parts Clash on Sunday after it was rained out Saturday night. You could not help but notice that there was nobody there in the stands.
I heard 10,000 was pushing it. That's what I heard.
I swear, because, you know, it was a cavern. It was like there was nothing there. I'm not being facetious. I mean,
most of the 10,000 was in the infield.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not bashing NASCAR, but I can remember, we all can remember, when that race drew a pretty impressive crowd.
Heck yeah, man.
That wasn't that long ago.
In the 90s, you could stand on the start-finish line just before the race and look at the stands. And, yes, there could have been a few empty seats, but for all practical purposes, the grandstands were full.
Yeah, for all practical purposes. It was a nice crowd every year for that. And you know, the more time went on, the bigger the event got. But this year, and this is in the aftermath of all their pre-Daytona hype and build up and rule changes and sponsor changes and all the, you know, the hype at most that they can get it, and there's nobody there.
But I did hear somewhere today that the ticket prices were $85 a piece.
Gosh.
I'm not sure that I would even pretend to pay $85 for a seat to watch that. Well,
and how long was it?
A popular group, apparently, because no one did.
Right.
How long was it?
That's absolutely ridiculous.
100 laps?
It was, there was a 25-lap segment.
And a 50.
And a 50-lap segment. And they had a, you know, an intermission. It was a caution. It was a caution flag where everybody could come in and get whatever. And also, in the course of this event, another of the new things that sure to this ain't going to be the last time this happens, a controversial issue concerning Kyle Larson and him failing the various repair on pit road requirements. Actually, he didn't fail the time limit. He had too many men over the wall, according to NASCAR. He had six men over the wall, and that was an immediate disqualification. So he's out, and according to the Chip Ganassi team, they contend they did not have that many, and they don't know why they were out, but they were told
there's got to be video.
And so in the aftermath of the Kyle Larson thing, it's the NASCAR revealed, and this is going, you talk about a goat rodeo, it is the onus of each team to keep up with when the 5-minute rule starts.
Huh?
Somehow they got the, like, how in the world is that going to work? They don't, the teams, the Ganassi team, and I'm sure they're speaking for every, don't even know the rules they're operating under.
My goodness.
He had a brand new sponsor, a Credit One Bank or something like that, that was on the car. And so their first outing, they get thrown out on a technicality. Nothing wrong with the car. Where in all of this rationale, how and where, somebody explain how this enhances the experience of watching NASCAR. And what is the rationale behind it? I mean, I'm not being facetious. Where does this make the deal better?
Well, apparently it doesn't.
Well,
but I think in like we used to say in the real estate world, the market has spoken.
Yep.
Yeah, when nobody's there. Literally nobody was there.
So what I'm confused about is last year they spent ungodly amounts of millions of dollars to renovate Daytona. You know, they're tearing up Atlanta this year to repave it. They're doing it to Texas. All these renovations, but why are they doing that if there's no gain back out of it?
Good question.
A very good question.
I had a question about the lineup for the All-Star race or whatever they called it this year. How is it that the Carl Edwards car with a new driver was in and the Tony Stewart car with a new driver was out? How did they rationalize the fact that one got in, one did not? Both of them were supposedly had a replacement driver for a retiring driver. The Carl Edwards car was in and they gave that, what's his name, the Mexican?
Suarez.
They said, well, he is replacing the retiring Carl Edwards. Yet they did not allow the Tony Stewart car in, and it had a replacement driver for
maybe,
a retiring
maybe
driver.
I think it was still this year somehow loosely based on last year's pole winners. They had, I think, basically going back to the original format, and maybe Tony Stewart didn't win a pole last year.
And well, Carl Edwards did. They had all kinds of other little rules to get people in.
But did Danica win a pole last year?
Yeah, they gave her one. One of the plate tracks, which I still believe they gave her a different plate than everybody else had.
Oh, they wouldn't do that.
Oh, yes, they would.
I mean, they gave it to Earnhardt every so many times.
Uh-huh. They just, I guess they just gave her an Earnhardt plate.
Did Alex Bowman win a pole somewhere?
Good point. They gave her an Earnhardt plate. I like that one.
Well, hey. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, Bobby.
I had a lady Sunday morning ask, and she's a pretty good NASCAR fan. Not, you know, super duper, but she does. She likes it, and she tries to, and she watches it and everything. And she asked me Sunday morning. She said, "How and what is this race about, and how do you get in it?" Referring to, you know, to the Clash. And that was a legitimate question. And this was she's more than a casual fan.
They go to several races a year.
And they go to several races a year, and she didn't know how it worked. And on the spur of the moment, I wasn't sure how. I just said, well, all I can really tell you is how it began, which was a race for the previous year's pole winners.
Yep.
Back in the late 70s or whenever the Clash began. That was the format. If you won a pole in the course of the year, the next year at Daytona, you were guaranteed to be in the Clash. But like all the other specialty races, it kept morphing and morphing. And if you'd done this, and if you'd ever won the Clash, and if you'd ever done this and done that.
So. They kept coming up with provisos. Of course, a little bit in their defense, if you have a few drivers that win all the poles for the year, now you've only got a very few drivers in the Clash. So that doesn't look good. You can't have an interesting race if you've only got five cars in the race. So I can sort of see them wanting to have some mechanism to have a field of racers. I know the what started out life as the Winston that turned out to be the All-Star race at Charlotte, they had sort of in mind a number of cars in the field. And if they didn't have that many based on the criteria that got them in, then they let they had a what did they call it? A qualifying race.
Where they got the Winston Open.
The Open,
still
that's right.
Have that.
And if they didn't have enough cars for the field, they would allow so many cars from the Open, the first, like yep, the year yep. that Jeff Gordon got in. Yep. I think there were five that came from the Open up to the All-Star race. He happened to win it, so that was
so good. We sit here absolutely verbalizing what's wrong with things when we can't even sit here and explain how the heck you get into the race.
That's exactly.
But those kinds of things are important.
Of course they're important.
I mean, that's very important.
It's very important. If it's a spectator sport, the freaking spectators need to know how to understand it.
You know, what people are talking about this preseason is I don't know even how to watch NASCAR this year.
Yeah.
You know,
or if I want to.
It's so convoluted that how to, you know, that. And my question is, how does that enhance the experience?
It for most of the fans, it just seems not to. I will watch the first few races just to see if I can understand some of these new rules and regulations and the whys and the wherefores, because I don't even think the broadcast people have a firm handle on what the new rules will actually do to the race. Somebody says heck of a mess. Yep.
I'm reading from the Kyle Larson article. At the moment, teams will be responsible for knowing how much time they have on the 5-minute clock to make minor damage repair.
So they're not going to have somebody watching to find out if they go over 5 minutes or
rodeo.
Not? Or?
Well, yes, but I'm going to bet you that there's somebody in the tower watching. And the thing is,
when does the clock start?
Well, that probably remains to be seen. But
and does everybody use their own watch or what?
Well, I guess somebody in the tower is timing them, and there has to be somebody on the team timing them so that they don't work themselves right out of a spot in the race. Somebody better keep up with it in the pits to know that they have to be on the track within so many seconds.
This is a quote from – I didn't even know that was a rule, Larson said. I guess it doesn't really matter because this is just an exhibition race. I feel bad for our new sponsor, Credit One Bank, that they didn't get to be a part of the last 10 laps. It's just confusing. We know now, end quote. So, and he's actually in the race and don't understand the rules.
So. Somebody on the chat line posted a few minutes ago, down the drain they go. And I'm afraid that we may be witnessing just that.
But, hey, this kind of stuff don't take a lot of racing acumen to understand. I mean, it ain't that hard. Racing is kind of self-explanatory only when it gets so multi-layered that you can't it cannot be understood. But, again, how does that attract people?
Right, right. How does making it more complicated attract more fans?
And that has to be the bottom line, is you got to attract. That's the problem now. Obviously, they ain't attract. The reverse of attraction, they're causing people to leave.
Yeah, the class of people that they are trying to attract, they're not doing it. And the new rules and the new regulations seem to be alienating the few fans that they have left. So how is that supposed to be a good thing for the sport?
I think we discovered most of the problem in Cody's reading of the article.
Boy, that was a bombshell.
That was a bombshell and a half, Cody.
You get the bombshell of the night award.
I loved your 24-hour kart racing story, but that burned, man. That other piece was amazing.
I found the Wall Street Journal version of it, and I tagged all three of you guys in it on Facebook.
Okay.
But it went on to say when Bill Jr. stepped down, he had 100% of NASCAR, and he gave 50% to Jim, 25% to each of Brian and Lisa. So somewhere along the line, he got rid of that 25% somewhere.
That was probably during the divorce situation, so he didn't end up losing it to his ex-wife or something, you know?
That, or I don't know if he might have sold the – I don't know if he sold the other 25% to Lisa, because she's pretty well off in NASCAR, and I think I read somewhere that she's the – top 10 wealthiest women in the America, you know? So
yeah. Used to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where the mini mall used to be.
All right, folks. This has been fun for a short staff tonight, man. I appreciate all of you guys. Cody, that was great, man. You brought a lot of stuff to the table. Enjoyed it very much. Proud of you, man.
Yeah, he stepped up and did good tonight.
He did, man. He stepped up and did good. You did too. You had a whole page, man. It was, I mean, you kind of wrote big, but it was still a page.
Skip double lines.
Yeah, he wrote real big and he skipped lines, but it was still a full page.
My eyes are getting so bad, if I don't write big, I can't read it. And then after I write it down and it gets cold, I can't read it anyway.
And then we learned that Jayski's now ESPN.
Jayski's now ESPN. Big change. Bopper, you've enlightened us with all your
insight. We've learned a lot of stuff tonight.
We appreciate that very much. Most of all, we appreciate all you fans that tune in. Let us be part of your Tuesday night. It means a lot to us. We enjoy it. We hope you do. And we'd like to say a special thanks to the men and women that serve our military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can all do this. To each and every one of you, good night. God bless.
Dragnest.com.